You have to help me here. I'm a long way away. But the compound, is that the place with the mini spine ramp, or is it which one is that? I see it. I hear you guys talk about it, but I don't know which one is the actual compound.
There's two like outdoor ramps in like our area, I guess. One is Rampant Camp, which is the one with like the big bowl, and then there's the spine in the middle. And this last season, they added this crazy like suicide rail, kind of like the death rail from Nis, where you would it didn't have any like it had a support, but it didn't have any blocking or
Like a
any
wave.
staircase. Yeah, exactly. And it would just kind
Yeah, I
of go
see.
down off of a ramp into nothingness. That's Rampant Camp. Then there's the compound, which is at Clark's house in Maryland. That's the one with the big bowl, and then at the end of the bowl, it drops down to like a there's a ledge on the right, and then there's a rail, and then there's another ledge on the left that's a kinked ledge, and then there's this big scoop at the end. And then there's a street course on one side, and then a little grind area on the others. That's Clark's backyard. That's called the compound. I
It's a
think,
blast. It
yeah.
looks good. Those things always look good, and then you get there and you go, oh, gee, this is much harder than I thought.
I think Clark's is everything is bigger and faster than you would expect, but I don't know that it's. I've heard horror stories about Rampant Camp. That ramp is really big. And that spine is really big. And there's a it doesn't just go shotgun at the top. There's a like a separation between the two. So I've heard people really eat it pretty hard going over that spine.
I'd like that.
Yeah, I'm sure you would.
Yeah.
You and Guy,
And oh yeah, guy would kill that. Well, they put that big like 6-inch pipe on the spine last year, I think it was. So they at least alleviated some of that.
Yeah, a little bit easier.
But I like that. So when I first started skate like a long, long, long time ago, there was a ramp called Fairfield Ramp, and it was a spine ramp, but it had like a foot. It had a spine, like a double spine, like a normal spine, and then a spine that had maybe a foot, foot and a half flat in it. You know, that you'd sort of air over the flat,
Oh, wow.
and a channel in between them. And that was where I sort of learned how to ride spine ramp. So on that, so I love that kind of
Yeah.
that sort of gap over the spine. Super, super fun. But that was where Tommy Fry did the first flat spin, was over
Oh, no way.
that
Oh, wow.
spine. Yeah.
Was it in
So
any
that's
videos or?
I think it was Jess Danforth was there, so it was shot.
Yeah.
Still photos of it was shot. Jess was losing it and freaking out, and everyone was. I think Julio was there too, and yeah, it was pretty cool.
Maybe it was that tour. Remember when John went down? What it was captured in Daily Bread? Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was the back in the day tour.
Back in the
Yeah,
day, I remember him going down for that.
he had that Bulls jersey, and he did that fish brain stall
That was the
on
one,
Bondi
yeah.
Beach. That's by far my favorite cover.
Yeah, I
Good old
mean, very
days.
long time ago now.
Yeah, like 23 years ago.
The good old days.
I'm so old. Oh, man.
Every day is just another day. So long as you get this chance to skate, I mean, at our age, any day that we're able to skate, I mean, it's a good day.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't believe it. We obviously just finished filming, obviously for the 50-50 thing, and body was feeling pretty good. And I took some slams, and then like literally a week after, I did my ankle. So I skated yesterday for the first time, and I'm going to skate back again since I filmed that video. And yeah, just tweaked my ankle. So anyway, it's constant injuries at our age, I suppose.
It's the weird
I locked
injuries
you in
too,
at my
right?
age.
Yeah, it's the pulled muscle or the tweaked back or something like that that just grounds you for a month versus back in the days, I'm sure you had some rough like surgery style breakage injuries. Now it's just like, oh, I'm getting old and my body doesn't know how to move quick enough.
It just doesn't wake up in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. But you're forcing it anyway. Like, nope, we're gonna go skate today.
You could say I'm passionate about it, so.
I mean, there's worse things to do. A lot of people get passionate about weirder things, so at least we're doing a physical activity.
The only 50-year-old at the skate park. Now, I'm not quite 50 yet, but
Not yet, not
it's
yet.
pretty
Are
fun.
you older than Edwards?
No. He
did he turn 50?
Tommy are the same age.
Okay.
Tommy Fry. So yeah. They're both 50.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm 48 this year, so yeah, they're a couple of years older than me.
It's not bad.
They're the old men, those guys. Far out.
Yeah, is there anybody older that still skates? Well, Tom, I mean, does Tom skate now? I know he's got the knee injury, but is he still out there from time to time?
No, so he had surgery and got that all fixed, and his knee's really good. So he plays ice hockey still every Sunday night.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. I remember that.
So, yeah, that's how he started skating, was ice hockey.
Yeah.
Which is weird for Australia because it's not a popular sport here at all.
Sure.
So, yeah, he was hockey guy. So he still plays, actually, every Sunday night. He plays in just a local league or whatever, and he loves it. And he gets out on skates with his hockey stuff sometimes. And occasionally I'll get him to ride bowls, but he's mad into his surfing at the moment. So
okay.
Shaping surfboards and, yeah. So, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, Hockey
is amazing. I mean, I played all of my life. I stopped playing when I got back into skating. It was just hard from a scheduling perspective to make it work. But there's no better like camaraderie. Like you go and you skate with these guys every time or this group every week. And, you know, you've got teamwork and you've got the full body exercise. Like it's a really, really great way to stay in shape. I'm sure he loves it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you see all the good actual skaters, not just grinders, but actual skaters, and they're all hockey. You know, you look at Alex Brosco, you look at Danny Beer, all the guys that, are really good on their feet. They all came from hockey. So
the big tell, I think, is skating fakie. So whenever you see somebody skating fast backwards or doing crossovers backwards, you're like, that guy, you know, or that person, they had a background in hockey somewhere.
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense for me. I never played hockey. And I went backwards a little bit.
Yeah, I would say. Less crossovers on half pipe, but you would hope at least.
All right, so I'm gonna put my PRs back on my skates, and I'm gonna learn how to do fakie crossovers better. I can do them, just not very well. So I'm gonna dedicate those training sessions to you a lot, and I'm gonna figure them out better.
It's easier on shorter wheelbase. So if you had like something,
I've got those compass frames.
Yeah, something 260 or smaller. I think that would be better. If you put the, because I clip myself, I do backwards crossovers, no problem, but I clip myself on wizard frames a lot because when you do that crossover, that toe gets really close to your heel. So if you have a shorter wheelbase, you'll have a little bit more room to do those, at least for learning.
Man,
that makes sense.
I spend a lot of time, obviously, riding backwards. And if I use 60 mil wheels, I could. Because I'm used to 56s, 58s, right?
Yeah.
It's that kind of close.
Yeah.
So if it's, you know, if I'm a 60 or a 62, it takes me just a second because I'll end up clipping the front and the back wheel, you know, the heel and the toe wheel, just because you're so used to. You don't realize how close you actually, you know.
You
get.
Absolutely.
So I actually noticed a difference. Like I just went with the compass 80 mils.
Oh yeah.
It took me a few minutes just to. Not to clip when I was going backwards. And they're short.
Yeah, they're 260, which is a little bit longer than our medium frame and a little bit shorter than our large frame. It's like right in the middle sweet spot.
Yeah.
But that 80 millimeter, it's such a great size for what you do. Like just cruising around, you can really get a good speed, but it doesn't feel like, once you get used to it, it doesn't feel like you lose a lot of speed getting to accelerate. Like obviously it's not a 56 mil wheel. But once you give it a few charges or get a little bit of downhill, you really coast really nicely.
Oh, yeah, massively. Like, it's actually depressing. The only time I really use big wheels is when I'm injured. and it's not that I don't. For me, if I've got time, I would rather be doing an aero or grinding.
Yeah.
So, or if I want to go fast on something, I get on my bike. You know, for me, I do occasionally go out cruising around, but the roads here are so bad and so dangerous.
Right.
That, you know, if I'm going to go fast, I go on my bike. And if I'm, you know, what I do most is skate. So if I do that, I go. I've got like 3 skate parks within 2 minutes of my house. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's perfect.
Yeah. So I can duck down and skate. You know, I can skate for 30 minutes and be home again in, you know, like 40 minutes. I can do a skate. So
when you started skating, it was only big wheels, though. When did you start skating smaller wheels?
Well, there was only 72 mil wheels when we first started. Like, not even Fat Boys were out. I think it was 70 mil. So it was only super lights and Kryptonics, the 608 Kryptonic wheels, they were called. And they were the only wheels that you could get, really, unless you bought really cheap ones.
Right.
And so we left to skate 1990 on those. I started end of 1990. And then I wouldn't have used small wheels until maybe 92 or 3. They started getting smaller. But again, it was like an anti-rocker thing.
Right.
We tried little wheels, like little ground-down skateboard wheels, but they were just too hard.
Yeah.
They didn't really work. And, so that's how I actually learned how to skate, and this is pretty funny, is we would go and play. Like, I was never a hockey guy. I didn't enjoy it. Like, there was a hockey league, and I went and played once, and I was just like, I was too frustrated. But we would go up to a school, you know, your typical school with staircases and gaps and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a game of tip, you know, like tag.
Oh, yeah.
Like, but build up tag. So there'd be 40 skaters, 50 skaters. One person would be in. Everyone would scatter around the school. And, you know, the guys who won were the guys who could stair ride or jump off things.
Yeah,
the people wouldn't fall. So that's how I learned how to skate, was running away from people. 91, I guess.
Don't they say, like, NASCAR, the creation of NASCAR was because the bootleggers were escaping the cops and they had to learn how to drive really fast?
Yeah, and they made their cars really fast.
Yeah, so they could outrun the cops.
Yeah. Well, that was it. That's how I learned how to skate. And then we did, obviously, we were riding ramps and things back then, too. But that's what got me straight, you know, riding gaps and stairs and all that kind of stuff was playing tip. That's how we started. And,
that's amazing.
Yeah, and doing jump ramp shows.
Were they all on recreational skates? I mean, this was before the TRS, I would assume, right?
No, TRS came out. I was on Blade Runners.
Mm-hmm.
Blade Runners with a brake on the back that we cut off, sort of.
Sure.
And then I got Lightning 608s, and then there was the Italian TRS, which were around in, I suppose, 92.
Okay.
91, 92. So they were around, but no, I never had the TRS until probably 93, I think. 92 or 3.
Got it.
So, yeah, they were the Italian one, the TRS, were awesome. The purple ones with the yellow buckle.
Yeah.
Loved that. Yeah, it was a great colorway.
I love that skate. It was so good. So, yeah, it was, that was the one that everyone wanted. I couldn't afford that. I just had the black 608s.
I would assume also importing to Australia was fairly expensive. I know now it's really difficult to get stuff down there at a reasonable price, not just from a shipping perspective, but because the dollar is strong and import taxes and things like that. Was it really expensive back then?
Really expensive. Yeah. I mean, obviously I was lucky, you know. I think the last pair of skates I bought was a pair of Lightning 608s in 91. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
so
of course.
I've been pretty lucky with that. So, but in saying that, I say I didn't pay for them. I've definitely paid in a lot of other ways. So,
not in cash, but
I'm sure a lot of people were making a lot more money than me off the shows and stuff we're doing.
Seriously.
Yeah. So that's how it started. I was skating for Coca-Cola.
Yeah. And, oh, wow.
A local skate shop. And I don't know if you remember the ads. Chris Edwards was on them. We were on them. The Coca-Cola ads, early 90s.
Mm-mm. I don't remember them at all.
Okay. Well, that was, I can't remember the ads, their slogan, but whatever it was, Coca-Cola. It was a big rollerblading ad, and it was a worldwide ad. And in Australia, they used us, and in America, they used Chris Edwards and Team Rollerblade.
Oh, wow. I'll see if I can find them. I try to add things to the show notes afterwards, and I'll see if I can find them. Around the 90, 91?
Around that time, yeah.
All right.
Maybe 92.
Fingers crossed. I Googled it, and there's Coca-Cola ad Icebreaker 1992 Australia.
Icebreaker? I don't know.
Who knows?
Everybody's Free, I think the song was, to feel good.
Sounds like a 90s song.
Starts out in a classroom. That sounds interesting. Yeah.
I'll do some searching for it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it'd have to be somewhere on the internet.
Yeah, everything is.
Front flips through a big Coca-Cola screens and, yeah, half pipe. We were the ones riding the half. You know, of course, there was no ramp or anything. You just see silhouettes going up into the air.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what I found.
Yeah.
I'll send you the link for the show notes later, Locke.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was it. We'd do shows for Coca-Cola on the weekends, and we had our own half pipe, and they'd tow it around, and, yeah.
Was this shows with Manly Blades?
It was. It was with Manly Blades, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was pretty good. Before that, we were doing skate shows just with launch ramps. We'd just drag these launch ramps around and just launch to flat over crowd and over cars and over ambulance. We did a drag car long ways once. That was pretty scary. Wow.
Oh, wow.
And we'd just blow up hypers, like we'd blow up their wheels just, you know, because you're landing so hard.
Yeah.
The hubs would just explode. And
makes my knees hurt just thinking about it.
Yeah. Or then we got Cosmos, but then the problem was with Cosmos, they were so strong, you would put your heel, the back wheel would push up through the frame, break the frame.
That's so funny.
It was all like the wheels or the frame, depending on what wheels you had on.
What time did Cosmo get started? Was it 93?
I couldn't tell you the exact date. We were testing them before they actually came out. Before they were actually a brand. Mm-hmm. I was testing them with a bunch of guys from Manly, but Tim's wheels were obviously incredible.
Yeah. Was Cockroach before Cosmo, or was it around the same time?
No, well before.
Well before.
He started. He's a skateboarder.
Yeah.
And he started with Aussie Skateboards, and then sold that, and then started Cockroach. Did Cockroach wheels, and then sold that, and then started Cosmo. Did Cosmo, and then after that Cosmo, he started skateboard wheels again. So he did lots and lots of different brands. Probably got 3 or 4 different brands of skateboard wheels.
That's amazing.
Mm.
It must have been amazing, especially since you were saying how expensive wheels were and just skates in general. Being able to help him design profiles, like I would assume you have some feedback at least in saying size and. Like, there weren't a lot of options. Like, right now, we've got, you know, my brands alone have, I don't know, a dozen profiles and sizes that we offer. But back then, I mean, the variety that you must have had, 2 or 3 maybe. And then here comes Cosmo, and they're like, we'll make molds. We'll figure out what sizes you want, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because he's a smaller company.
Sure.
And he was doing everything himself. Therefore, he could do everything himself. So, you know, he wasn't waiting on, well, should we do this or should we do that? If he wanted to do something, he could just do it. But it was his company. You
know, yeah.
He could do whatever he wanted. So, I mean, we were riding. I still remember I was at, there used to be Camp Rollerblade, which was like a big camp every year for kids.
Yeah.
And I was riding 53mm wheels on vert, 53mm streets. They had like a 10mm hub in them and just a little tire on the outside. Just to see how fast they would go. And they weren't fast enough.
I remember those wheels. Yeah, I remember those wheels. Because we used to distribute Cosmo in the States through toilet distribution. So that was Ted and I think Jess was involved. Maybe he wasn't involved financially with that. But it was Ted and this guy, Aaron, who worked with Ted at 50/50. And they started that distribution company. And I'm sure Jess was involved somehow. But that's how I got to play with Cosmo wheels. And that was probably 96, maybe. So it was well after you'd gotten started. I think it was after John Julio started skating Cosmo. And that might have been the connection when those two got together. I don't know the timing. It's kind of hard to think back 20-plus years. But
yeah, I couldn't tell you. But I think John and I got our wheels about the same time.
Sounds about right. And yours was a 57 and his was a 56. Is that right? Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, we had Tom had mini flies that were 55. Mm-hmm. John's were 56s. Mine were 57s. Manuel and Renee Hogren's were 58s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think John's were 58s too. Memory. And, Renee's had the larger hub in them.
Yeah.
So they were a bit faster, but a bit harder.
I remember a little later, Tim Ward had the 54s. Is that right?
Tim had a 54. Yep, you're right. And then there was the 53 Street.
Yeah. Barcodes. What were barcodes? Were they 50? Do you remember those?
50. The Andy Rocker, yeah.
Yeah.
The little ones.
Yeah. So cool. I remember that snapshot where it's like when all of those wheels came out, when your wheels and Tom's wheels and everybody's wheels, because that's when we started distributing. And that's when I had them and I was able to actually hold them. And one of the coolest things from Cosmos back in the day was taking flywheels and mini flies and using a TRS frame and rockering them. Do you remember all that?
Yeah.
What was that all about? Like what gave them the idea? Because it wasn't anti-rocker. It was flat rocker, but it was the first time.
So most people don't know that. You remember the old aluminium Rosis frames that first came out? Yeah. So not the very first one. The very first ones that came out had those horrible little axles that didn't screw in. I don't know if you remember those. They pressed in and then they had the slide.
The slide that goes on the side. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the ones after that.
Yeah.
That screwed in. Tom Fry had a lot to do with the design of those.
Mm.
And because at the time rockering your skates was like the opposite of what we're doing because everyone was anti-rockering.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't actually advertise it, but that was the first frame to come out with a natural rocker from frame. So that was a 1 mil rocker.
Oh, no way.
That people didn't realize because it's quite a long frame.
Right.
That frame was quite long. And it actually came with a 1 mil rocker because Tom Fry's always skated rockered skates because of his hockey background.
Yeah,
so hockey. That's why he always looked so good riding around bowls and turning and carving because he had a natural rocker on his frame. And when he joined Rosis, that was his sort of, like, we won't tell anyone, but we're just going to do this. So it was actually done a very long time ago that people don't really know about.
That's so funny.
But now you do. Now you do. So that was actually a 1 mil rocket frame in terms of not the same as a what are they called? The wizard frame, but probably a first concept of that, you know?
Yeah. And it wasn't...
So to put a natural wearing rocker in your skate from the start.
Was it rockerable? Like, did it have rockerable frame spacers or it was set that way?
No, it was set that way.
Wow. Yeah, imagine getting away with that. So, I mean, they must have sold a lot of those. Those came on, did they come on the lowriders? Those those yellow and black ones?
Yeah, they were the lowriders, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's why they felt so good, and no one knew. That's why they turned so well.
I had never skated those, but it totally makes sense now, especially as Tom's hockey background would dictate. Skating rockered is definitely the way to go.
Yep. So I
agree 100%.
I never have. I much prefer flat, that little bit more stable.
Yeah.
But everyone's different, you know?
Everyone
likes different things.
So the TRS frames, I remember they had these oval rocker spacers, I guess. I don't really what...
Yeah.
Rockerable frame spacers, right? They would go up and down, and you could rocker them up. And the trick with the Cosmos was you would ride mini flies rockered up, and then you would ride flywheels, which were 62, I think. So it was 55 and 62, and then you would rocker them. Was it like a flat, or was it like a 1 mil rocker, I guess?
It was almost rock, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, that had nothing to do with the Cosmo. Like, the rockering system was in from the start.
Yeah.
You know, so it had nothing to do with the Cosmo wheels. It was just that with the Cosmo wheels, you had so many, you know, 1 mil increments, which is half a mil, you know, half the wheel.
Right.
So you could set them up however you wanted, which was pretty good back then.
So crazy.
Yeah. Very.
I skated that setup for a while. And really liked it. I think I was on Rossi's Moscow's or something like that. They also had a rockerable frame. It was a really great setup.
Yeah.
What was your setup back then? So once you started skating Cosmo wheels, were you still on... I mean, you weren't on 608s anymore, right? Yeah.
So I was on 72s. That's all there was when I first started. And then, well, I mean, depends how quickly you want to go through it. But then I, after that, I was just getting free skates from Rossi's for a little while. And I would ride the Rossi's low riders on vert because they were just so fast with the metal frame. And the rollerblade TRS on street with, like wrenches, just your standard rollerblade wrench on the side and a skateboard rail on the side of it. And then after all that, I mean, a few years later, I got picked up by Oxygen and I rode Oxygen skates. And I'm not a big fan of Oxygens, but I know lots of people are.
Oh, I am very much so.
Why? Tell me why.
For the first reason is they lasted forever and didn't have a lot of money, so that was the skate that I'd always get. And I really liked the hinge and the cuff, like it had the channel in the cuff, so it would flex really well, but still be super supportive. And it was a skate that was comfortable enough that I could wear it all day long in high school, and I wouldn't have to worry about my feet hurting.
See,
And
all very valid points.
everything was replaceable if you could get your hands on the stuff, so.
Really tall frame, really super heavy, and
Yeah.
I've got really small feet, so I had no sole room on them. I loved backsliding on them. You could backslide for days. Like you could just stand on them and backslide. But I just found any sole trick on them really hard and them really heavy. So I went from that, from riding for Oxygen and then to ride to K2. And I was just like, man, I cannot ride vert in these K2s because their heel was flat.
Yeah, it was super
But
flat.
all of a sudden I could grind. I could do all these sole tricks again. And then we, changed that. Like we'd put heel wedges in them and change the K2s a little bit. And then I loved that skate because it was so direct. Like the boot that wraps around your foot is connected straight to the frame. So whatever you do, it instantaneously does it. So that was, and it's super light. And again, you could backslide for days in them because they were so soft on the side.
Those.
Then I went to those and I rode those for a very, very, very long time. And then King 55s came out. They were going to be my pro skate at one point, but I don't know what happened. They
Oh, I
just
didn't know
pulled the
that.
pin on that. They pulled the pin on that.
That's amazing. Did you help develop that skate? Like, were you involved
Did
with it?
lots of work with that one.
That's
And the
crazy.
concept was there. It's actually the Adapt concept.
Okay.
So it's the same,
Peter came up
very,
with the
very
first.
similar concept. Obviously, the Adapt's done it beautifully, and the
Right.
King 55 did it really well for about a month. And then they'd get too soft, They were beautiful skates for about a month.
That cuff, is that the thing? Because the differential, I never skated the King 55s. I skated Fatties for a bit. But the big difference to me was the cuff was so much taller. Was that the huge change, or were there other things in the King 55 that were
No,
notable?
so the King 55 only had an internal cuff, a bit like the Adapt. So there was
Oh,
no
okay.
external cuff.
Oh, that's why it looks so tall, because it's just covering and it's a continuous of the bottom of the skin, like the
It's just
material,
the
right?
boot. So the boot and the sole, that's
Oh.
all there was. There was no cuff and then strap. So there was internally support. And it worked really well, like I said, until it got a bit old and then they were too soft. Then they would get too soft. But yeah, I did that. And then obviously did the 250s and the 125s and all those kinds of things. And then in 2000, I rode for Rollerblade for 2 years. So I was on that pair of skates that I sent you was my last pair of pro skates I ever had. And that was for Rollerblade.
Those were great
But yeah.
skates. Those were they the Access that you sent me?
I can't remember. They're all the same to me. They're all that same boot, different colors. And
Downtown or
I obviously
whatever.
had the 50-50 frames on them. But I love that skate. That was such a good skate.
I did too, and it continued to evolve. So if I just listened to the Powell Street or Powell Movement with Zeke, have you heard that one yet? With
No, I
Mike,
haven't listened to it. I saw it pop up.
yeah, really good, good show. And he talked a little bit about the rollerblade thing, I think he got more into it on the Jump Street with Ezekwe, what, a couple years back when he talked a little bit more about it. That concept, though, is just so, I mean, again, it's so sound still. You know, it's like you said, the adapt style, where it's got the internal skeleton, you put a skin around it, and you can customize that skin for whatever you want it to look like, and then just add whatever you need for grinds and support. And, I mean, they kept that design up until I got back. You know, they had the New Jack Team Skate, the black and white one, you know, up until, like, 2018. So it lasted, you know, 18 years of making that skate work.
Well, that one of my favorite skates, not anymore, but one of my favorite skates was that Rollerblade Frankie Morales skate.
Totally.
And I rode that for years. Like, it was such a good, everything about that skate was good. That that Frankie skate, it fit my foot really well. And that's, like, I know you guys talk about it all the time, but that's why the them skates are so good for me. Mm-hmm. They are the perfect shell size for my foot.
Perfect.
And I'm a different shell break, like the Rosies to a, you know, a 9-10.
Right.
You know, or is that right? 9-10? Yeah. No.
Rosies has 8-9. An 8-9. Yeah. And then they have 10-10.5.
See, and I'm like a 7, but my foot's so wide that I need to have a size 8. So I'm like an 8 in length. So that's perfect for the 7-8 for the thems.
Yes.
Whereas the Rosie, I'm a size bigger. I'm a shell size bigger. And they're narrow. So they just crush my feet to death.
Yeah.
So that size break of the them, just as soon as I put them on, I'm like, this is perfect for me. That's the right. And so that's why I was just like, John, these are just
perfect for you.
Definitely suit me because they fit my foot.
Were you skating Rollerblade TRS variants up until John released the 908?
Yeah, so I had the newer ones. I can't remember what they're called.
Right.
And I had Celtic frames on them for a little bit, but I got rid of those. I wasn't a massive fan of those. Sure. But again, everyone's different. It's because of where I skate. I skate concrete bowls, and the really, really deep groove in that frame, because it's so deep and it's got the protection, I would wear through the protection and then the protection would jam in my wheels.
Right.
So it just didn't work because I was riding so many concrete poles. So, yeah, it didn't work for me. But, yeah, that's what I was on. I was on those RVs.
That's crazy. Can't remember what they were called. Alphas, 0.7s, 0.8s, what are they called?
0.8s, the gray and blue ones.
Yeah. There were a few.
The switch frame.
Again, it's an amazing skate. It's my most, thinking back, it's my most memorable skate from when I was skating back in the days. First of all, you know, first Rollerblade UFS skate, which huge, you know, validation for the movement. You know, Solomon doing it by themselves was kind of a Solomon's doing whatever they want sort of thing, and that doesn't really have any merit to it. But then USD came out with the Cyrus, which was eventually, you know, converted to UFS. Razors came out with UFS adapters so that they could have a UFS frame. But Rollerblade coming on board as well was like, all right, now the UFS is a thing, you know, because Rosies didn't want any part of it. K2 didn't want any part of it. They were like, you guys do your own thing. We're going to continue selling completes and we're going to make less money because we won't be able to sell as many replacement parts and stuff like that. Rollerblade saw the future. And was Tom with Rollerblade at that time? Or was he with K2?
I don't. When did UFS come out?
2001. It was around that time,
I
think.
I think Tom was with Rollerblade then, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was. I think he left K2 right after the King 55 and when Matt LaCrosse left, which was probably around 99 or so.
Yeah, no, that were there. So I did my last year with K2 in 99.
Okay. That would kind of align then.
Yeah. Because that's when they were just like, oh, as a big corporate, you know, the numbers and figures just weren't working out.
Yeah. It's business at that point.
Yeah, that's right. You can't keep pumping money into something. They're not doing it for the passion of it like we are.
No. Yeah. They definitely are not. Well, that's pretty amazing. And you don't see, I mean, you look great on 909s. I think they fit you well. I love that they're not a big looking skate on you. You know how sometimes skates look like clown shoes on people, and it's just like the skate doesn't fit the person, but they definitely fit. Like the ratio is right. The dimensions feel like they fit you well.
Well, for me, especially, I'm an intuition fan. The first pair I got, they hurt my feet so badly for the first, 10 skates maybe. I didn't heat mold them or anything, but they were just a size too small. And then when John started offering the individual sizes for them, mm-hmm. they were just so good.
Yeah.
Just so responsive. But in saying that, I do lace the boot. I don't know if you've seen, but I lace it around the back to lock my heel right down. Because the Intuition liner does move. I actually got a tip from Danny Beer, because he's the Intuition guy. Mm-hmm. And he said, don't lace your Intuition liners up super, super tight, because it'll bring the liner in, and then you'll have room between your shell and your liner. So do it up just so it's done up, just so it's pulled in. But then make the tightness with your actual boot itself, and then that'll squeeze down on the liner and stop any movement. So stop doing your Intuitions up super, super, super tight.
Uh-huh.
Let them sit inside the boot, and then cinch your boot down on top of them.
Interesting.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. Since I've been doing that, makes a huge difference.
Was the them Intuition your first experience with Intuition liners?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you got Danny Beers. What was the first Intuition? Was it the Danny Beers? Yeah, Danny Beers is when they introduced the individual sizing, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. So I had them ones before that.
Yeah. And they fit you perfect. Like
the black ones or the blue ones?
Yeah, they had blue. I think they were a blue boot with a black liner.
I think that's okay. Right.
And I just had the black boot with the black liner. Yeah.
So, Scott, did you ever get any of the custom K2s, like specifically King 55s, like where they did the weird colorways and stuff?
King 55s, they never did the colorways with.
Okay.
But all the other ones, yeah. So we would order. We would put our order in every month. So every month.
Oh, jeez.
So every 4 weeks, you would just put in your order, and if you missed your order, you wouldn't get your customs. But,
no way.
So every 4 weeks, you could pick whatever color you wanted, and whatever was written on the tongue, and in whatever material you wanted. So if you wanted new buck leather, if you wanted, like, whatever you wanted. Like, Matt Lacrosse, who was the team manager, had a pair of tennis balls. You know the fabric on tennis balls? He had a pair of tennis ball cages.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know what?
What was your favorite custom that you got?
I've said this a few times before. It was just a black 250 with red highlights on it. But the main reason I liked it is because I did my Daily Bread interview in it, and it's got dedicated written across the tongue.
Oh, that's
awesome.
So that's my favorite pair. So they were just black. That's awesome. They had red swipe down the side, and then they had red 50-50 grind plates.
Yeah.
And my wheel, which was an orangey color at the time. Yeah.
That's so good.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, that was by far my favorite one. But, yeah, I had blue, I had silver, I had lots of black ones with different colors and brown ones and all kinds.
That is such one
a month you get.
Such an interesting business model where, I mean, I don't think anybody could do that anymore. Again, it's a shout out to the skins being the differentiator. You know, everybody's skate, custom skate was the same underneath, but you would have different materials, different skins, different writing, and now it's this completely unique, specialized skate just for you, and it brings so much attention. Like, you go out there and skate it, and you get in a magazine, you get photos, you get in a video or whatever, and you got these crazy skates that people are, where do they get those? And it's like, everybody's talking about them. And I mean,
very good.
Here we are 20 years later, Ben's asking about, you know,
still talking
specific,
about
it. Yeah, exactly. Specific skates that were there. It's such a great idea.
Matt Lacrosse and Tom Heiser together, but obviously think outside the box. They're not. They're super duper creative. I don't know if you follow Matt Lacrosse, but his artwork is just insane. Like, it's beautiful artwork. And Tom Heiser's the same. I wouldn't call Tom Heiser's beautiful. It's wild and out there and, you know, crazy, but I love it, you know. So you get those two guys together sitting in a room. And, you get some pretty crazy stuff.
That's an understatement.
I can't imagine what what stayed or what's on the cutting room floor of the ideas those guys came up with.
Well, one of Tom Heise's biggest one, it was that the basically wheel protection, you know, the lowered H block, that was just a game changer. People have no idea how much of a game changer that was. Because all of a sudden you can ride your 57s and your 58s,
mm-hmm.
not with a super big gap, but as you pivot up, say if you picture your groove on a coping and your legs splayed, you know, UFO, so you're mm-hmm. in your groove.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you bring your feet together, you know, you actually raise those wheels off the coping or off the concrete because of the shape of the block. But you're not losing any groove. Mm-hmm. The groove is still there. You're just higher up in the groove.
Yeah.
Which now seems just normal and, you know, every skate's got it. Those, you know, most frames have got it. So it's not that unusual. But at the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, to go, oh, how about we do this? You know, it was pretty wild.
And it was a replaceable H block, which,
that's right.
you know, famously they patented, which kind of screwed everybody else over. But the fact that they saw the future, and now look at Sola frames, look at the ground control Featherlite 4s. Like, I mean, the original ground controls were replacement H blocks. That was their big thing, that they had this crazy, huge H block that you would put in the middle. And then, of course, K2's lawyers came after everybody, I'm sure, and said you need to stop doing that. But the vision that original K2 skate had, just incredible.
Yeah, really, well, like was. I said, you've got two guys like that sitting around.
They're
both hilarious.
Yeah.
and money, you know, like, because it's a big company, so that they had money. Yeah. You know, we were hiring Porsches in Vegas and stuff like that. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah, for videos that were never released, I heard.
Because
why not?
Yeah, because why not?
I was going to say, like a lot of times with the budgets, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah, like we had such a good team. Like it really was. It was pretty, I don't know what the word is, eclectic? Maybe not eclectic, but lots of different characters.
Right.
You know, we had Sean Robinson, you know, who's a, you know, you'd go, I don't want to say jock because that makes it sound bad, but he's an athlete, you know, like
right.
he was a baseball player and he was, you know, like spin upside down. You had Matt Solano, probably the most talented person to ever put skates on.
Mm.
You know, you have Matt Mance, who was just like a, you know, a punk, you know, but really hard. Brits of Vegas kind of guy, you know, like.
Right.
And then myself, who's way more mellow, but would ride everything. And then, you know, you had Sessa, who was an athlete. And then, you know, like, so you had this crazy mix, Tom Heiser, the artist, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, well, earlier on, you know, Ortega and Ryan Jacqueline and all those guys too, but.
Right.
Yeah, it was really, maybe, I don't know what the word is, but very strange mix of people, whereas most teams had very similar people. You know, you had the England team.
Yeah.
You know, Petty, Julio, you know what I mean? Those kind of, they went down a narrow pathway, whereas K2 sort of had a wider net.
It's super interesting.
Yeah.
Is K2, aside from Manly, is K2 your oldest sponsor, the sponsor you were with the longest, or Rollerblade?
Cosmo was.
Cosmo? Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah, Cosmo. I was with Jethro for a long time.
I always forget about Jethro. Jethro was an amazing
idea. Yeah, those cargo
idea.
Pants, those were awesome.
They're the best. The
was
best
that,
to skate in.
That was Angie, but was it also Johnny? Like, was Johnny involved with that, or was it mostly Angie?
Yeah, he was sort of art direction, but it was sort of through Daily Bread.
Yeah. That was a really great time when we had interesting clothing companies designed for what we did. You know, it was after 976 started, way after like Rise Above or Cement, but it was a very like, again, purpose-built clothes that fit our lifestyle. And did they go do anything outside of skating, or was it only skating?
No, it was just in skating, but Angie... So, I mean, I know you know Angie. And most people won't know. They would have heard the name Angie Walton, but they don't know who she is. And she is an absolute powerhouse of a woman.
Sure.
And ruffled feathers also, because she was opinionated.
yeah. A little opinionated, yeah. little determined.
But I absolutely love that in her. And so her push to get all sports, BMX, skateboarding, and rollerblading together, at the time there wasn't scootering, so those three sports as a combined entity, that was her goal and her push, which people may or may not like, but it turned into an incredible time. So her whole vision was just, no, we're not sporting jocks, which, again, times have changed, but this was from back then.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to, this is who we are. We do what we want, when we want, you know, we're punk rock kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, she approached Warped Tour and got the ramps on Warped Tour. You know, Vans Warped Tour had rollerbladers as a staple.
Yeah.
That was because of her. And people don't know the influence that that had. You know, like every stop we went to, every single city we went to, I did hundreds of shows for those guys, for Vans. So just like you put that now, can you imagine that now? I mean, I know we're sort of coming back around to a more, you know, that people are trying to be more accepting, but realistically, if you look at the comments online, they're not.
No.
They're not. I would love to say they are. And my local skate park, Manly, I rock down there and I'm the only rollerblader and it's right. Fantastic. You know, they're a great bunch of guys because I skate with them all the time.
Right.
But generally, if you see something gnarly on rollerblading, you look through the posts, there'll be half will be, yeah, that's amazing. And the rest half will be, oh, there's still fruit booters.
Yep.
You know, there's still this, there's still that, blah, blah, blah. Do it on the skateboard, blah, blah, right. blah. You know, right. So it's as much as I like to say it's not there, it is still there. But Angie tried to break those white barriers down a very, very, very long time ago, which was, especially at the time, was phenomenal. So I have a lot of respect for Angie and her. What she did in the industry is just incredible.
Yeah, no doubt.
And not just a sporting one. She was an amazing skater too. People forget that. She was incredible. She was the first one I saw, professional I ever saw skate. It was her and Chris Edwards down at Manly.
Hmm.
Incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah, incredible lady. A lot of respect for her.
Can you reach out to her? It's been a bit. Last time I talked to her was years ago. She did an interview that I'll link to. Also with Jump Street, I think. Yeah, with Jump Street. A lot of her background that I didn't know. You know, I felt like I knew Angie fairly well. Like the times that I was living in Southern California, I would go down to Daily Bread almost every weekend. And, you know, I would, aside from working with Daily Bread on the magazine and editorial and getting the 50-50 ad completed, just hanging out, you know, I remember seeing movies with them and you know, when she was dating Johnny for a bit. I definitely hung out with them a lot and I learned a lot about her. She's, yeah, just got this incredible life that I didn't even know. I didn't know her whole water sports background.
Yeah,
and like she's got stories, man. So I'll definitely link to the episode. If you haven't heard of Angie or you don't know anything about her, definitely give it a listen. Cause she's an amazing, amazing person.
Yeah.
And her mushroom blading.
I've got a lot of respect for her.
Podcast. Sorry, it was great. I was also going to say that her mushroom blading interview was really good as well.
Okay.
I enjoy both of those very much.
I don't know that I heard her on mushroom. So I'll link to that one too. And I'll listen to that one. I know that I heard the Jump Street one. It was more recent, but I'll find them both.
Yeah, that's the mushroom blade one was the one that kicked off the one magazine posting their shenanigans about it.
And, oh, is it?
Yeah, and that was half of the reason that I started unfollowing them.
Yeah,
because I
hear you.
A lot of the stuff they were doing, I just wasn't a fan of anymore. And you know, they posted the 6-point mounting system that adapted, and they're like, "Does this still considered UFS?" Like, yeah. Yeah, it is, because that has nothing to do with the frame. That's the sole plate that's on there. But what are you going to do? They're still rollerblading. They're still having fun. So
it's all about rollerblading, yeah.
Yeah, it's all about having fun.
What did you do when the sport died? Like, so you've been, you know, I everybody knows that's listening to this knows that, you know, I stopped skating in like 2005 or so, and I, you know, started family and, you know, focused on career and, you know, skating was still something that I followed, but it was a remote thing that happened. You know, I was still Facebook friends with a lot of skaters, so I would see what was going on, but I wasn't involved in that. you continued to skate. How was that? Like, did you get to come out to the States and visit? Like, how is it over those 10, 15 years since I got to know you and compared to now? Like, how did you keep doing it?
So, 2002, I had, I was riding for Rollerblade, and I had, 2001, I was riding for Rollerblade, so I'd done 2000, 2001, and what was I doing? I was riding, I think I was riding Spine Ramp, I think Brooke Howard Smith was there, I was in Sydney, so, and we're just skating, and I ended up landing, slipping out on a spine and pushing my elbow back the wrong way, and I broke the back out of my elbow, and I was like, oh, you know, that really hurt. Drove myself to the hospital, you know, big brace on my arm and whatever. And then that was right before I was supposed to go to America, and then I competed, and I had this, you know, like a robo brace with like a pivot on the end, you know, that limited your movement.
Sure.
And I competed. This was about maybe 3 or 4 weeks after I broke my elbow. And I got, so the reason you get paid as a professional, which is obvious to some and not obvious to others, is because you're a billboard. And the day I worked that out, my life got much better. So it gets rid of all ego, gets rid of everything, if you realize that you're just the signage board. So if you walk around thinking that you're more than what you are, which is just a human, the same as everyone else in this world, the only difference is you've got a logo on your shirt. Mm. Like that's the only difference between everyone. So that's why I never put anyone on a pedestal, and I don't expect anyone to be on a pedestal. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like we're all just trying to get by in this world. So that's how I'll start.
For sure.
Anyway, I knew that I had to go over to America to get coverage because I'm not getting paid to be in Australia to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I'm skating or not, it doesn't matter, because the reason that the companies are paying you is to get your logos on television or on videos or magazines.
Sure.
So I've gone back over with this brace on. I can't remember even what it was, but it was an ASA. And I did terribly. For me, I did terribly. I got out of the top 10. I hadn't been out of the top 10 in 10 years, nine years.
Right.
So since I started going to America in 94 to 2001, 2002, I've always been in the, made the finals, unless I, something random happened. So for me, getting 16th was awful. And I was really down on myself, and I'm my own worst critic. I've always hated my own skating. Anyway, Fabiola said, come to my house, stay with me, we'll just get you skating again. Because I was skating badly, she could even see. And one night, we're there skating, and they would always skate super late at night. I always skate during the day and in the morning. So I was tired skating, and all I was doing was a alley-oop monster, which is a trick I can do in my sleep.
Right.
My toe got clipped on the coping on the way in, so I had a broken arm. I flipped 12 feet over and landed on the back of my head and the back of my shoulder. My shoulder just went over here.
Oh,
so I got a
no.
broken elbow and a broken shoulder. I'm lying on the bottom of the ramp.
Oh, my God.
I go to hospital. I get a flight back the next day. Anyway, get my shoulder somewhat fixed, you know. 6 weeks later, I was like, oh, I've got to, you know, I'm a billboard. I've got to go back to America. I'm going to be seen. I go back to America, get straight off the plane, straight to filming a video. Like literally arrive at 6 a.m. Okay, we're skating now. We get straight. It was probably a 10 or 12 stair down a ledge on the left. So that's my backside. And I go up backside rail quite easy. But it was super, super, super waxed. Now, I was not a big fan of wax at the time. I've looped out, sat on my hand on the bottom. So I've gone from the top of the ledge, missed all the stairs, landed on the bottom on my right arm. I look down and I'm like, oh, that's not good. That's painful. I go to get up and my hand just bends over. Like I'm like, oh. So I pick my hand up. So I've still got the elbow brace on. My shoulder's about 5 weeks in from being fixed. And my arm's facing the other way. Like my hand's like 45 degrees.
Oh, my God.
I scoop my hand up and Bo Coddington actually drove me to the hospital. I had to have 2 surgeries on it, you know, big pins and all kinds of stuff to get it. One surgery didn't work and had to have another surgery on it. Then flew home and I was lying at home just going, you know what? I've done it. Yeah. I can't get any better than what I've got. Like, you know, I've had an unreal run. I didn't want to travel anymore because I didn't think it was fair. I wanted to get married. That's what it was. I wanted to get married, and I didn't think it was fair to travel as much as I was traveling.
Sure.
Whilst married, and I was like, well, I can't do it forever. And unfortunately, it was a crap way to finish, but that's the way I finished. I was just like, well, this is it. I'm done. So, yeah, that was a super unfortunate way to finish. But, you know, what, the industry was in a decline.
Mm-hmm.
I was making my money off doing shows and a little – I was on a salary, but not a big salary like I was with K2. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I was like, you know what, it's probably a good time.
So, that was 2002,
yeah. 2002, 2003? Yeah, so I was like 28 years old, which now I think is super young.
Yeah.
But at the time it was quite old for rollerblading.
Right.
And I, you know, I was paid as a professional from when I was 16 years old, so that was a pretty good run.
Very good run.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. So that was the end. And then your question is, sorry, that was a long way to get to your question, sorry.
Yeah, no. I learned so much. I mean, I know you pretty well. I'm learning so much. So continue, keep talking.
Yeah, just shut me up if it's not interesting.
No.
Yeah. So then afterwards, and literally that was I was over it. I'd done it for a long time, and like I said, been a billboard for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So when I stopped, I literally just completely stopped. Didn't mm-hmm. do it again. I did it maybe 3 or 4 times a year, you know, maybe every 2 or 3 months. And I got right into downhill mountain biking and racing. And yeah, so I did that, moved to Whistler and started racing and riding bikes. And then, and then after that, how I got back into it, because I was doing it maybe once a year. I competed in New Zealand in like 2003, 2004, 2005. There was a competition. And because I'm really good friends with Brooke, he would invite me out and,
right.
you know, put me up, and it was a free trip, so I would compete then. So I competed those years just on vert, but yeah. I wasn't good, you know, like I was just kind of cruising around. And then Dom Tien, do you know Tien?
Tien Yuen? Yeah, I do. Yeah, I don't know him, but I know him well. from Vine Street stuff.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, that's right. So Tien, I skated with Tien a lot. And he invited me out and said, oh, do you want to come out and skate at Bondi? And I was like, oh, yeah, sounds good. I haven't skated in ages. And I went out there, and Dom West was there, and CJ was there. I knew CJ and Tien, and that was it.
Yeah.
And, and just that spark just sparked up again. And, so that was – I couldn't even remember what it was, but it was quite a fair few years of me skating maybe 4 times a year, 5 times a year.
Right.
Because I had family and young family and all the stuff that we do as we get older.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And then since that day, since skating the Tien that day, I haven't stopped. I've been 2-3 times a week.
That's incredible.
That's awesome. So how long from that session at Bondi till you did that edit with Dom when you were doing the Royale down that beach handrail? It was like the drop rail.
I couldn't tell you exactly. I'm guessing 3 years.
Okay.
2 years, 3 years. Something like that.
Yeah. And you're still skating the Frankies, the Frankie Morales TRS?
Was I skating the Frankies?
I think
I was in Rosie's then.
Okay, I'll have to watch it again. But I feel like, or at least there was a, I remember seeing a picture of you doing that, front rolling that rail, and you were in the Frankie TRS.
Yeah. Yeah.
That might have been an old picture too, though, but.
Yeah, I mean, we've been skating that rail since before we could grind. That was like your test of manhood back in the day.
Yeah.
If you could do that rail, it was like, yeah, you know, I've made it. I can do it.
Is it still there?
I think it was me and another skater called John did it the first time. It was like, you know what? Step up, do this, you little
punks. Yeah. Prove it.
That was the test.
Is the rail still there?
Is it sure still
incredible? Yeah.
Still haunts me.
Oh, that's awesome.
What is the craziest trick you've ever done, and what's the worst bail that you've ever had on that rail?
It doesn't. You guys would know the photos because you're historians. But sure. There was a photo in Daily Bread, and it was just a soul grind on a rail. It was probably about, I think it was 28 stairs, drop rail.
Mm-hmm.
But the rail wasn't a round rail. So So it was, you imagine, you know what an I-beam is?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Cut in half. So it was a T. So the top of it was maybe 10 mil.
Oh, God.
So the top of it was a T. It was a super steep. At the end of the handrail, there was a gap of maybe 2 meters, and then the end of another handrail started.
Ooh.
And on the left, so it's a right-hand side rail. You can picture this. On the left-hand side is a concrete ledge that sticks out about head height. So if you went down this rail, you had to drop, you know, a 30-stair or whatever it was, 28-stair rail. You had to lean onto the drop site, because if you went straight off the end, mm-hmm. you would get straight chest or face first into a handrail that stuck out. The left-hand side had a concrete ledge that came out, and the right-hand side was down into a car park, into a downhill. And it was – I'd been out with Tom Fry. Like, we used to go out dancing a lot, hip-hop clubs right. and stuff.
Right.
And it was for my interview in Daily Bread. And they were printing it. You know, they needed the photo Monday. Saturday night we'd been out. I'd arranged to meet a photographer there Sunday morning because there was cars and stuff, so Sunday morning was the only time to do it. And I was a little bit feeling a little bit rough. I was there by myself, and we'd been out until whatever o'clock that night. You know, it was like 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. No warm up, no nothing. And I jumped on this. I looked at it for about 15 minutes and skated around the car park trying to warm up, just going, "What am I doing? What am I doing?" And then half jumped on it, like, you know, like a safety, just jump and hold it sort of thing.
Right.
That was the first try. The second try, I fully committed, jumped on it, and didn't realize how fast it would be because it was a super narrow rail, like I said, a T.
Mm-hmm.
And I've looped out, but I was over the drop side. I've thrown my arms back, caught the rail. I was horizontal, caught the rail on the back of my arms. As I'm horizontal, it swung me back around. Then I slid down the rail on my forearms down
my
the drop
side.
And then the next one made it clean and was just like down the car park by myself with my hands in the air, claiming it like a moron. But yeah, it was a good feeling.
Man, you earned that one.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. But it wasn't the most technical or anything like that.
Right.
But just the whole experience around it was, I mean, I still get people talking about it.
Mm.
You know, I can't believe you did that. Because it's you go there and you're like, oh, damn, that's, you know. But the photos... The photo's in the interview somewhere.
Isn't it in the interview? I'll find the interview. I think most of the Daily Breads are online now in one place or another. There was a...
I mean,
go ahead.
I've posted the photo before, so it'll be on my Instagram.
Oh, okay. I'll find it on your Instagram.
Or I'll send it to you. But yeah, that was you know, just skating by myself. I skate by myself a lot, but that was pretty full on.
When did you... So I remember Vine Street. When I came back, Ben was... introduced me to Vine Street Volume 2. I don't think I saw the first one initially. Were you in both of them, or were you in...
No, I was just in Chapter 2.
Chapter 2, okay. I don't remember the first one, but I remember you having a bit in Chapter 2. What was it like filming with Dom? I mean, obviously, you know, we just did a project with him, and I, you know, am a huge fan of all of his work. What... You filmed with a lot of people. I mean, you filmed with Bo, you filmed with... I mean, back in the days, Video Groove, I'm sure, was with, I don't even know who that was, Evan Stone, maybe? I mean, I don't know.
No, that was T-Bone.
Yeah,
Evan, I filmed with Sean Tomlin.
Sean Tomlin, there you go.
So VG1 was Sean Tomlin. And then VG2 was obviously Dave Payne.
Dave Payne,
That's when he came in.
Yeah.
And, I filmed with lots and lots of people.
Yeah.
But filming with Dom is awesome and exhausting. His videos speak for themselves, or movie, I should say films. His films speak for themselves. They're
right.
Obviously the highest of highest quality, and it's not obviously only the gear that he gets to use, because he uses the best of the best gear.
Right.
I've had him film stuff on my phone, and it looks incredible.
Yeah.
I'm like, why can't I film?
It's like a piano, you know? You could go to a piano, and I could play chopsticks. But, you know, a real pianist can make that thing sing, you know?
That's right. And then you put a proper piano in a grand piano, and you're
my
goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's Dom. So, for example, like, the latest one we did. So mm-hmm. was so I can't tell you how hard it was. And it doesn't look like much, I know, and the tricks aren't exactly what I wanted to get. But he's got a young family. I've got three kids. The timing, we had a lot of rain, so we went out a few times and just rained. And, you know, we couldn't do anything. And the actual last, there's a kink rail with some spikes in the latest edit. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That took probably an hour and a half to film that.
No way.
And it's just, it was raining. Yeah. So we're wiping the rail down. The ground was wet, so it was slippery. And I was just, I just could not get it. I crashed and crashed and crashed. And then you make it, and then we go to the next angle. You know what I mean? Like, it was
right.
so hard. So filming with Dom, you know you're going to get something that's going to look fantastic. So you try really right. hard to make it look the best you can.
Right.
And his work speaks for itself, you know? Like, it's absolutely incredible. So, yeah, he is really, really good, but it's exhausting because you have to do everything over and over. You know, your foot will slightly sketch.
Yeah. We used the topsoil on that ledge as the thumbnail, and I got to say that's probably the best. I don't see you do a lot of topsoils on ledges like that, but that's the best topsoil that I've ever seen you do. And from a,
that's a good one.
Placement, like you are – absolutely flat. You know how there's this critique with people, current generation, that roll their topsoils? There's absolutely no wheels touching that. Was that first try? Was that first try?
That, again, you can't, when you see things like that, you go, oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
There was nothing fun about that. It was tiles.
Yeah. It looked crazy so, fast.
It was probably my chest height. Super, super high. It was steep. And the landing was a slight downhill landing.
Mm-hmm.
Pavers that were mossy. So the pavers were actually slippery. So if you have a look, my foot slides and goes crazy at the end of it.
I saw that.
Landing... almost dropped me. Like, I landed it probably about five or six times, but landing and my foot, like landing it dropped me because it was so slippery, mm-hmm. you know, with one heel coming up all the time.
Right.
And that was the best landing I got with that sketch because it was just so much impact because it was so steep and mm-hmm. so fast and mm-hmm. so high. And then you're landing on mossy ground that just the sheer amount of my weight, I'm heavy, I'm like 80 kilos, would just slide, like, even with super grippy wheels, I was just sliding all over the place. So,
right.
No, I after that, I had a Bex and a lie down. Like, I was,
nice.
That was probably the scary. Oh, that and the sweat stance were the two scary things.
Ooh, though. that sweat looked scary too.
Again, raining. That was the same morning. It was raining for that kink rail. Uh-huh. It was wet. The ground was wet. I'm trying to dry it with towels. Like, it was just, oh, I wanted to get it done. It was 6 o'clock in the morning.
Mm.
And the cafe, that's got cafes right at the bottom of it. I was just like, oh, I've got to do it. And just the actual initial jump on, because I haven't sweat stanced a proper down rail in a long time, let alone a drop down rail.
Yeah.
So, it's one of those things. If I can picture myself doing it, I'll do it. And I might crash, but I'm pretty stubborn. Even at whatever, nearly 50.
Yeah.
That whole edit was great though. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, Dom makes you look good, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, I could. Look,
you've got to have a good subject to.
Yeah, I could shoot with Dom, and I don't know that it would come out that well. But maybe it's just me. What went through your head? So I've never done an edit. I've never put together an edit. What is your, like, working with Dom, did it change working with Dom? I'm just super curious how you, like, did you go scouting for spots? Did Dom provide suggestions? Was this like, did you have it in your head? Like,
no, there was a few more things that we wanted to get, but just with timing and bits and pieces. Sure. Like, there was a really nice line in Manly we wanted to get, but it was again raining, and just time. We just didn't have the time to do it. And there was a couple of other spots that I wanted to do, but again, it was wet. And to tell you the truth, it would have been the ender. And I just wasn't confident when it was wet. Like it was scary. And you know, kids work, all the rest of it. And I'm not a professional, you know.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So in terms of the spots, back to your question, no, I picked all the spots. I've had them for a while.
Mm.
We wanted to get Vert in there just for history's sake.
Sure.
And that kind of thing. And again, I didn't do a 900, which was a bit, I was a bit annoyed with that. I did try a few, but I was just absolutely exhausted. Riding Vert is exhausting.
Sure.
And when you're doing things that many times, you just get more and more tired. And I was trying the 900 at the end. We wanted to get all the footage first before we worked on a trick.
Right.
And I know I still got it, but I just didn't land it that day.
Sure.
So we wanted to get Vert in there, so that was easy. That's a ramp near my house. I wanted to get Mini Ramp or Manly in there somehow, just a little bit, even though everyone's seen that before. So that was one session.
Yeah.
And then obviously the street spots, I picked them all off. I had just everywhere I'd go, I'd go, yep, I want to do that on that, I want to do that on that. And there was a few things I didn't get what I wanted on those spots. But you know, it was possible. So
yeah, that was great. I mean, it's an incredible edit, especially at the, and this hopefully doesn't come across wrong, but I think this might be the oldest guy putting together an edit at that level. Like, I can't think of anybody else who's put out content at this quality at your age. You know what I mean? And again, it's coming across horribly, but like,
No.
It's a testament to how good of a skater you are that you can still do stuff at that level. Like, yeah, I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'll just say thank you.
Yeah. You don't have to say anything.
I really put a lot into it.
Yeah.
And it took a lot out of me, actually. It was not easy. And I know it's just Soul Grinds and Royales and whatever. Like, people will see it and they'll glance over it because I know what people are like now. I know what I'm like. You know, you'll see an edit and go, that was amazing. Click next one. You know, next one. But if people haven't seen it, I'd really like people to watch it just on a big screen. And not because of me, but because of Dom's, how good his stuff is. It just looks incredible on a big screen. And I'm not talking about the skating. I'm talking about the way it's edited. Where I live, Sydney, is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's got, you know, it's beautiful. It's just beautifully put together. So yeah, he's incredible. And we got it done, but it was a lot of work.
Yeah. So he did the CJ documentary short film, released that maybe 6 months ago, 4 months ago, something like that. And then before then, I guess, was Joe's Blue, which was incredible. Just an amazing piece that Dom did. I mean, it's crazy that we have people at that level. Like, imagine trying to go back when we first started skating and find people who were that good at making videos who were also passionate about skating. Like, that just, it wasn't a thing, you know. Has Dom, and this isn't a Dom interview, but did he grow up with skating? Like, how did he get involved with
skating? Have you seen Dom skate?
I've never seen him skate, I don't think.
At the moment, he can't skate. His knee is completely and utterly wrecked.
Mm-hmm.
He's a way better skater than me.
Oh, really?
He is phenomenal.
I've never seen him skate. Because he's always behind the lens, right?
He is phenomenal. Like, I'm talking, we're mucking around. We had just had a grind rail in the little box on a car park, and just out of nowhere, true fish to fakie, half cab sole, out spin 360 the other way. Just like
nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's phenomenal.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
he's an incredible skater. Like, we used to do, that's sort of how we became good mates, is he lives not far from me, maybe 20 minutes, and Manly Bowl is 5 minutes from my house, 15 minutes from his house. And so we would just meet at Manly on a Friday afternoon and skate the mini ramp for a couple of hours and just, you know, talk parenting and fatherhood and marriage and, you know, have a beer and And so we became good mates doing that. And he's skating. You'll see some, if you go back on my Instagram, you'll see.
Okay.
I've got some edits with him in it.
I'll find a few. Yeah, I mean, nothing but respect. It's incredible to see these professionals in their field contributing back to our passion, like our community, you know, in everything. It's like, I look at Cletus, who, you know, designed the Wish Frame, who is passionate about skating, but that's not his job. You know, He worked with NASCAR. He works, I don't know where he's working now, but he was an engineer, like, but he had this vision of how can I change the way frames work, and followed through with it, like bringing that level of expertise to an industry that isn't used to that level of contribution. It's incredible.
Well, you made it the point right then is followed through with it.
Hmm.
That is by far, everyone's got grand ideas. I've got grand ideas. I've got a skate company and a liners and boots as yourself.
Yeah.
But for example, the project we did together, you know, that we've just put out, it's a lot of work and a lot of touring and throwing and following up with what you say you're going to do. Mm-hmm. It always takes longer than what you expect, always.
Sure.
But to actually pull it off and do it, I take my hats off to anyone, especially you with the, you know, the new skate coming out. That's just incredible. You know, to John, you know, like,
for sure.
Obviously John Julio is one of my great mates, but you know, that I know his family personally. I know him personally. I was speaking to him yesterday. He's in China.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sacrifice. Like, it's a lot of work. He's up. He's awake all the time. I mean, he's constantly working, constantly thinking, you know, how can I do? What can I improve? What am I going to do next? What, you know, like this, whatever. There's so much stuff going on. Like, it's to actually do something in the industry is much, 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 much harder than what anyone would ever think.
No doubt.
Talking about it is really easy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our project was great. You know, I think the industry has been at a really interesting place because we had that big COVID boom where it felt like, you know, Ben and I were doing the podcast every other week and we couldn't keep up. You know, after we would do the podcast, a new product would drop or a new brand would be introduced or something new was happening. It's been very slow lately. You know, the last 6 months, you know, the start of 2023. And I think the shops have a lot of inventory out there. So there's a few reasons for it, but the shops having, you know, leftover skates that maybe they ordered too many in 2022 and they still haven't sold through. I think a lot of people in the industry being a little hesitant to invest money into making new products and stuff like that. But hats off to the guys that are bringing out new stuff. You know, I've been pretty slow. We haven't brought out too many new things compared to years past. John just did the basement collab, which not only is the first skate of this year, it's first skate in a while. First skate since the weekend skate, I think, in Blade Cup of last fall. But also with the two new shells that are going to be coming out with it. So the small, medium, and then the not so extra small shell. Probably why he's over in China right now. Super excited to see that. Love that they did something with basement. The Intuition liner is crazy. Just the way that it's
so cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just this amazing looking liner. The whole skate, I mean, just it's such an interesting. I'm always a big fan. You know, I want a black skate for me. That's just the way that I always go. But I know that it's super important whenever you drop a product, you should have your conservative product and then you should have your push it a little bit product. You know, not only from a marketing perspective, you need people talking about it. Nobody's going to talk about another black skate, but it's going to continue to sell.
Which he's dropped at the same time.
Precisely. Yeah. So you've got one that's like, you need the minimums because the factory won't do, you know, 100 pair of skates. You need to reach whatever that minimum is. So you do your black safe skate or your white skate safe skate. And then to bring your minimums up, you bring this marquee skate, which is this crazy pink and blue, you know, collab with Basement. It's incredible. I put a pair of your frames in Photoshop on those skates, and it looks pretty good. I'm just saying. I don't know if you can pull off the pink, but I think you should probably try.
I would definitely. I have no problem. I used to be, no, black. Black. Maybe yeah. With black and red.
Yeah.
But no, I've completely changed. I love those bright blue ones. And
yeah.
And I actually really like, the first time I saw those pink ones, I was like, oh, I don't know what they're called, if they call them pink, but I'll call them pink.
Yeah, I don't know what they call them.
I was like, oh, I don't think I can get away with that. Don't think. And the more I see them, the more I'm like, you know what? The light blue buckle, light blue heels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's almost like it was made in advance that the wheels should match the buckle, because it definitely comes together.
I might have to ask you.
I know nothing was going on, trust me. And if it was, you were working a lot harder than I am. But yeah, it was a really fun project. Again, thanks for working with me on that. I love the fact that we ended up doing wheels as well as frames, because for me, I love nothing more than selling I miss those days when we had signature skates, and it would have the boot that the rider would wear. It would have the frame. It would have the wheels. It would have the whole thing. So you could get the model that the pro model was, signature model, whatever, that the rider actually skated. And I love that we were able to do that with yours, even though it wasn't a skate. You know, you could get this and you could put them on a Basement skate, or, you know, the blue Clarks skate, whatever you want to wear.
Yeah.
But being able to bring out both wheels, I thought when we first talked about it, was like, I don't know if this is a good, like, we're going to have a lot of wheels, you know, but I really like the response has been great. So we have a 56 mil 88A. We have a 58 mil 88A. Both of them are available, so you can put them on, you know, whatever frame setup you wanted. Yeah. What was your, so I've asked you before, but what do you prefer for what? Like, if people were buying those wheels, which would you recommend for what style of skating? Like, how do you use those wheels?
So whenever there's a, I'll start with my favorite skating. Skating is riding bowls.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere you can go around a corner, you know, it might be from a surfing background or whatever, anywhere you can cruise a corner and then go up into a grind, there's no better feeling than flying through a corner and into a fish brain or sweat stance or something. Feels unreal. So if you're skating things like that, like your what did they call it, that big ramp that you're talking about with the spine and the
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of thing, I would be on 58s there, because you get so much speed through the corners with that profile, and you're still going to be able to grind because it's a bullety sort of profile.
Right, right.
So anything like that, a vert ramp, a larger bowl, even a concrete bowl, or even for riding, if I was going to just skate to the shops, I'd be on that profile, that 58, because it's so turny and swivelly, and you can mm-hmm. do your swivelly. They're not a they're quite a soft wheel.
Yeah.
So they're not the 90s or the 95s or 92s or whatever. And the reason for that being is purely speed.
Mm-hmm.
So people will naturally think a harder wheel is faster, and I've had this conversation with people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason a car has suspension.
Mm-hmm.
Race cars have suspension because the surfaces that you're running on are not perfect. Now, I've done so much testing of these wheels, as you know, like you've sent mm-hmm. me them. I've been riding 56 mil wheels, 50-50s for over a year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In the original profile too. So you've had...
In all different profiles,
yeah. The different ones, testing.
Yeah. So, and I've obviously tested the different urethanes for 50-50.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
As you're hitting an uneven surface, if you have a really hard wheel, it will hit the front of that imperfect surface and slow you down. So I've... From all my testing, 88 is a faster wheel for most surfaces, unless the surface is absolutely bullet glass.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because you'll hit those imperfections and it slightly slows you down, whereas the 88 will absorb it a little bit and roll over a little bit quicker.
That's interesting.
With that urethane. So that's why I picked the 88. It's not that good for doing shuffles and slidey kind of things because it's grippy.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, means it's fast. So if you want to go around a corner and pump, you can lean and push and those wheels are going to catch you. You're not going to slide out.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why I went for that hardness. And then the 58s is obviously, like we said, those bowl corners. Mm-hmm. And then the 56s actually last the same amount of time as the 58s. Mm. So don't think, oh, I'm going to buy a 58 because it's going to last longer. It's going to have more urethane. It is actually a pointier wheel, so it wears down faster than the flatter profile. Yeah. So they're going to last the same amount of time on both wheels. So
there might be just as much urethane. It's just in a different configuration.
That's right. So it's going to last the same amount of time, both wheels. So you don't need to – don't buy a bigger one because it's going to last longer. They're going to last the same time or very similar my testing. But the acceleration you get on a small wheel, on a small transition, it gets to speed quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So I ride Manly Bowl a lot. I ride, you know, 5-6 foot transitions a lot. The acceleration, I don't have to – I'm old. You know, I get tired. If I ride a 56 mil wheel, which is sort of counterintuitive, you don't have to pump as hard to get to the coping on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to coast as well. If you ride a big open park, it's not going to coast as well. But if you're riding something back and forth, a mini ramp or you know, a little bowl with a smaller wheel, you accelerate so much faster, so you have to put less effort to get up. So therefore, I can skate longer.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like it's a different thing. So if I'm riding Manly Bowl, I'll ride it on my 56s because it's a 3 to 5 foot high mini ramp. I can fly around on it so fast because it accelerates so fast, and I'm not doing big feast distances on it. You know, I'd never ride them on a mega ramp.
But right.
For those kinds of things, and obviously I use them for street. That's the size I use for street because it's so low, really stable landings. Flat profile, stable landings, anything where I'm dropping and landing, that's the reason that I went for the 56s for streets. And I'm learning toe and heel rolls, so I can't heel roll yet. I think I've got the toe ones sort of sus, but not really.
Yeah, the flat profile really helps with that, the stability that you get for toe rolls. I'm horrible at them as well, but like you, I want to learn them. It's that new style that the kids are talking about.
Well, you say that, but I said to Tom, I sent one to Tom the other day, a toe roll. I'm like, did you ever think we'd be doing this? He's like, we've been doing those since the 90s. Pretty true.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Tom was doing shuffles since before that was a thing, right?
That's right. That's right. So, anyway, that's the basis of the frame. I like the balance too because it's not so impactful. You know, it's less impact on my elderly bones. Which is why I've got the balance twos, and then the wheels are exactly what we spoke about. So the two different sizes, there's a lot of thought that's gone into that. It's not just, oh, these are the wheels that we make.
Right.
You know, we've been literally testing these 56 mil wheels for over a year now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've had them just in black, you know, just black frame, black setup. I've been riding them for more than a year. So
they're selling well. Yeah. I think, you know, 56 was a weird... To be honest, I was hesitant to do it. 58 made a lot of sense. 58 is like what everybody expects. And doing a 58 with a face profile just made so much sense. You know, having a more of a bullet profile, just like doing slides with big wheels, you want that profile so that you slide on top of the coping, you slide on top of the ledge.
Mm.
You don't have this harsh angle that you just kind of get wheel bite. You just slide over it. So 58 was a no-brainer. But 56, like, I didn't think that there was a market for it. And I think it was you that convinced me when I was building the mini ramp. And you were like, wait until you skate that with 56 mil wheels. Because you saw, I mean, and I'm not a great mini ramp skater. So, you know, you saw that my speed, you know, like, the top speed that I was getting at, you're like, okay, wait until you skate that. Like, you think it's fast now. Wait until you skate it with 56 mil wheels. I think that was the way that you phrased it. And I'm like, if that's true, then 56 mil wheels would make sense. Because a lot of people our age skate mini ramp, you skate little transitions, you skate park. And we don't mind as much that we can't get to this huge top speed because we're not getting to this huge top speed. We want quicker acceleration. We want... that nice little carve over a mini ramp, and the profile being more of a rounded flat profile. If I remember, we started with the same profile as the 58 and learned really quickly that that profile wouldn't work as well, because with the less amount of urethane and the pointier profile, you start rubbing on the side of the walls, you know, and
scrappy frames.
Yeah. Our frames are fairly narrow, but if you had a chunky frame, you know, some frames are a lot chunkier. Like, I'm sure a Sola frame would have been fine because that's a very thin frame. It's the aluminum, right?
Yeah.
But if you had a chunkier frame, you would slide out really easily with the old 56s. So there needed to be a way to make it wider. And I had a really difficult time understanding that until I think you just started explaining it to me. And it's like, it's about acceleration. It's not about, you know, the coast. It's about getting to top speed as quickly as possible. And I'm like, okay, I think I get it now. And I mean, lo and behold, like, I sell a lot of 56s. We do them in a few different hardnesses now. It's a really popular size.
Were they faster on your mini ramp?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I'll add the 88A for me is the optimal hardness. And I don't know that that's very common in our industry. You know, you look at wheels and primarily they're 90, 92. And I think, you know, when we started the wheel project, it was 85. And the reason I did that was because you were saying how Cosmo started with 85. Now, obviously, Cosmo is different. You know, different urethane, different times. Urethane. But it also has a really big core, where our core is still the smaller, like 30 mil. I think it's 30 mil core. No, it's a 26 mil core, I think. Whereas the Cosmo was like, I mean, 32 mil, 34 mil, something like that. It was a really big core. And it was like 75D, I think. So it was a really hard urethane. Is that right?
Yeah, it's more the urethane. Yeah, it did. It had a 75D hub, but the hub was flat. Yeah. It didn't go up into the wheel at all.
Okay.
But yeah, it was. It's more the urethane. So the Cosmo urethane is completely different urethane.
Yeah, yeah. Night and day.
So it felt a lot harder than what it was, and that's what I will say with the 88.
Yeah.
You'll be fine doing all your grinds, but if you do not grind properly, you will get pitched.
Yeah.
So you have to be on point with it. I'm not going to say you're not going to get any wheel bite and everything's going to be fine.
Right.
Because if I'm tired and I don't grind properly, I do get, you know, you get a bit of bite. But for me, the pros outweighs the cons. You know, like you grind right, the speed you get and the acceleration and the grip you get is just bloody, it's just awesome.
There's a nice bounce to it too that you don't necessarily get with harder wheels. It just feels like rocks. Whereas with an 88A, a good 88A, you know, sometimes I get over that transition and I land on that bank going down. And it's just like you can pump yourself through. And it's just like this really nice, this flow that you get into. It's not one trick. Yeah. It's like you're flowing around the park. And I really love that feeling. It's like chasing that, you know, that I don't golf much anymore, but like you know, you swing and you're horrible. And you do one that's perfect. And you're like, oh, that's it. Yeah. I got to chase. I know what it feels like now. I got to do it again. And it's like, oh, I'll get it. And you just got to keep doing it.
See, I was only ever good at sports where I'm the projectile. Anything where I'm hitting something else. just awful. Throw me in the air, I'm okay. But yeah, hitting a ball or, you can have that. I can surf and bike and skate and box and things like that. But hitting a ball just frustrates me.
Why do you think... You might not have an answer to this, but why do you think wheel technology hasn't gone very far in the last, since Cosmo? I mean, and it's kind of hard for me because I don't have any Cosmos to skate now. And honestly, I don't know what the urethane would feel like 20 years later, if it would have been better, if it would have been worse, but
I've still got them and I still ride them.
Yeah,
but they're more slippery now because obviously they've cured for 20 years.
Yeah,
it is a complete different feel. You can slide them like a nice, like a hockey. Yes, they're 85A, but they don't feel like it. They're it's a much firmer 85A, so therefore it's really springy. So you get that good spring liveliness out of them. But I don't know how it's done, but they don't wear out as quick. And you can slide them like a hockey stick. They're not grippy. So they're a complete different feel to the 50-50 wheels. You won't get wheel bite on them because they slide. Like, they're not a grippy wheel.
Right.
Especially on a skate-like kind of material. But on concrete, it's unreal because you can shuffle and slide them and do all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Which is really good. So that's the difference. The difference is these are grippy.
Yeah.
And soft and feel really nice. The Cosmos were much, much slidier. Wheels, so you didn't get wheel bite on them. You could run them flat, you know, 57 like I used to run,
right?
And even with the old frames, you know, and you're fine, you're not going to get wheel bite with them. So right. That's what made them so special.
There were,
and they were strong as anything. They never broke,
and that might have something to do with the core design, that there's a limited amount of urethane and the core itself is a lot bigger. We don't see that very much anymore. And I wonder why wheel technology hasn't gone anywhere. You know, there's been dual durometer, you know, in Cosmo technically was a dual durometer. It had a core, had a 75D hub, and then it had the tire, the 85A tire. There were wheels, you know, there's the Gods and the Undercover dual durometer that has the white, it's like a 58. I don't know what the actual measurements are, but like the inside is soft. It's like a 78A, and then the outside is like a 90A, something like that. Ben, is that right? Something like that?
Yeah. The last time that I asked somebody about that, they were saying that the outer material was like a 95, was much, much harder, but then the inside was in the 80s.
Yeah.
So I thoroughly enjoyed them. That's the only square profile wheel that I've ever skated that I didn't hate.
Yeah. I know that there was that brand M1 that had a few different versions. They had a dual durometer similar to that one. And then they had this one that was the Trinity, which had this hub that was kind of like a drift wheel that it on the inside, instead of just being a flat wheel, it would kind of come in like an hourglass. And the goal of that was it had a little bit more of a pivot. So when you would go around bowls, the wheel would stick, the tire would stick to the wall. But when you're skate, like it would kind of stay against the wall a little bit longer. It was super interesting.
It allowed to flex a little more.
Yeah. I got a few sample wheels that you sent me with Cosmos dual durometer. It had like this inner ring sort of thing. Were there any other cool wheels that you tested, or like how did that... Were there any that you came out with? Yeah.
I mean, it was how many years? 92 or 3 to whatever, 2002. Uh-huh. So, yeah, there was lots of different wheels that I tested. His urethane in... I take zero credit for Tim's.
Sure.
It's all him. He came up with all the ideas. It wasn't me that was coming up with ideas. He would just say, do you want to ride these? These are fast. These are slower, these are grippier, these are not as grippy.
Got it.
So yeah, it's not definitely not me that's doing any of the design. It was all Tim, but I tested lots. We tested huge, like I tested, I don't know if you remember Renee's core.
Yeah. The big core.
One with a very large
and there were holes. Yeah, holes in it. Yeah.
Yeah, I tested that as a 50 mil wheel.
As a 50?
Yeah. So it just literally had a urethane tire around it.
Oh my god.
Jeez. That must have been crazy fast.
We tested different suspension ones, like different hubs that flexed. The hubs actually flexed in them. Because of the urethane that he used, it was, you know, it's not plastic. It was a urethane and it so it was quite strong. So you could put less material in them. And then the hub would actually flex.
Oh my
god. So it's a fine balance between speed and flex. And, you know, if it's too soft, like, you know, you get a too soft of urethane,
right?
It's going to slow down.
Right.
So it was just all the balance. But I it was so long ago. You know, like, yeah. We did lots of that kind of stuff. So
I love it. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm a huge geek when it comes to technology and gear and that sort of thing. I want to do more of that. Like, I think we've invested a lot in wheel profiles and I think our urethane is great, but I'm still in pursuit of like, what's that next thing? You know, how can we make Wheels even better? Because I feel like there's a market for it now. Like, we're grown up, we have our own money, and wheel prices are getting expensive. You know, Cosmo used to always be that really expensive. Well, maybe it wasn't so much for you because you were down in, well, I mean, you wouldn't pay for them, but in Australia, it wasn't as expensive, I'm sure, as a Senate cheaper. Wheel or a Mind Game wheel or something like that. But in the States,
well, they're about the same price as Hypers. Like, they're only $2 more expensive.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. In the States, they were, you know, $30 for a set of four back in those days, something like that, where, you know, a normal wheel would be 20, 22, something like that.
Yeah.
I see the wheel prices now. They're going up. You know, here in the States, it's not uncommon to see wheels four for $50, four for $60. Ours are lower priced. We've been able to work good deals, and we order so many wheels, it's easier for us to keep the prices low. But I feel like with that, there is room to start experimenting with different wheel designs and do suspension, do bigger hubs, do like whatever, and charge a little bit more, but make the wheels better. Like,
yeah,
we've been, and wheels have been wheels for so long. Like, there's got to be something else out there, you know?
Oh, there definitely is. Lots of different things you can do and try, like we spoke about, but it just depends on who's going to pay for them. You know, like the market for people that pay, for example, for adapt skates, beautiful skates, handcrafted, very expensive. And you get people that go, yes, I want that, because that's, you know, and it's, I see it a lot. I'm quite heavily in biking as well. And you see it, you know, you get your carbon mainframe from Europe and you're paying for that, you know, and people pay a lot for that.
Right.
But 90% of the market isn't that. That's a very tiny market that are going to pay that. You know, I can get wheels, I can get good quality wheels for whatever, $40 a set. You know, like, so why am I going to pay that? There are going to be people like me that like things the way they like things.
Right.
That would pay for it. I would pay for it because I would rather have the experience that I want.
Yeah.
Than a lesser experience on something that I don't like as much. Hence, I've got a really, really nice bike.
Exactly. You know? Like, yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. And yeah, I know you,
kind of person I am.
You love your coffee, and I'm sure that you've paid good money to make something that, you know, you could make with, you know, a cheap Breville espresso maker, right? But it wouldn't be, like, you can tell the difference. And
that's right. So I roast like all it my that own much. Coffee.
Right. That's, I mean, that's something that I feel like there is that market. And I don't know how big that market is, but in blading, there are people who buy adapt. There are people who buy the Driotti frames, you know, those handmade nylon frames from Europe, wherever they are. I think there's a market. And I don't know what the future holds, but I'm excited. You know, I love being able to throw ideas towards you for wheels and have you shoot them down or try them and say that they're good or they're not good. Because, you know, I don't know anybody who has more experience in testing wheels than you. I think it's definitely your area of expertise aside from skating, you know.
Skating. Yeah, it's I have spent some time doing it. I've been doing this for a little while now.
Yeah. Well, cool. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about? I don't wanna, I think we've hit everything. Yeah,
any questions?
You got any questions, Ben?
Yeah, so you said that you were really into biking, Scott. When was the last time you did a century ride? Or have you yet? A century ride, 100 miles.
What's that? I don't even know what that is.
So that's a 100-mile ride. What's that? 100,000 kilometers? I don't know.
I ride begrudgingly to the top of a hill and then will blast down the hill as fast as I can.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that sounds way more fun than roasting your taint on a hard seat for several hours.
No, I have lots of suspension on my bike, lots of travel, and I rode yesterday afternoon, and we ride up, and then we find drops and jumps and cliffs and do that jump off stuff.
So that's awesome.
That's the riding that I did. When I finished skating, I did it a lot, and but a really good friend. Very hard to find people who are in their 50s that rollerblade, that all my friends bike. So that's something I do with the people my age. And then the guys who are a bit younger, I skate with. Obviously, the Vine Street guys are all getting a little bit older now too, which is fantastic. They've all got kids. And starting to have kids. They've, you know, got newborns and things. But I'm almost out the other side. You know, I've got a 17-year-old. I've got a living with an adult. My youngest is 10, and then I've got a 14-year-old girl. So,
where does the time go?
Yeah, they grow up fast, man.
I don't know. I see Chris Edwards skating now, and I'm just like, I can't believe he's still.
Oh, man.
He got into great shape recently, too.
He's been working hard.
Yeah. Really hard.
Yeah.
Really hard. Something I need to start doing again.
Yeah.
I have a goal in mind, and I'm going to get it because it's something I've wanted again for a while. And I need to buckle down. I've got a great gym. You know, it's available to me for free, and I get an extra hour for lunch if I go work out.
Yeah.
And just for whatever reason.
Mental health too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That is a huge help for that. Weed only does so much.
Well, yeah, it's that's something we could talk about though, just briefly, because we've been talking for ages.
But, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That to me, skating to me, one of the main reasons I keep doing biking, skating, surfing, boxing, the four things that I love, is for mental health. Like if you're not moving your body,
mm-hmm.
Your brain doesn't function properly. You know, your brain functions through movement, mm-hmm. you know, is a big part of it. Yeah. You've got to eat well. And obviously there's a lot more in mental health than just exercising, but it's a massive helper for things. And I'm talking as someone who has suffered from mental health issues before. So that's why it's important to me, because my work isn't always pleasant, and mm-hmm. And I've seen some horrible, horrible things and had to deal with those horrible things and had a quite a bad bout of PTSD maybe 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Just from dealing with teen suicides, which is never good. And I went to three teenage, early 20-year-old girls who suicided, and I've got a daughter, and it just really rocked me.
Yeesh.
To the point where I couldn't leave my house.
Wow.
And I'm not saying skating saved my life. I got proper help for it. But the movement, the activities, the actual moving, and not being sedate even when you don't want to, like
mm-hmm.
go for a walk, do something, is so important. And for me, skating is one of those things. I get mm-hmm. to go out. I can spend an hour. Like, I'm very lucky. You know, I live in a beautiful place with skate parks around. 2 days ago, I went out to my local skate park. It's tiny. I did sole grinds and shifties, mm-hmm. and you know, that's all I did. Just cruised around, and I felt so good, like afterwards. And it's just really important for everyone to have something. It doesn't have to be skating, obviously, but it's for someone like me. I do something every single day. I have to,
mm-hmm.
and really important. So I suppose that's what I'll finish on. I think, especially for men my age and young, or middle age. Men, and suicide is a real, really, really big issue, and not that I was ever there, but
sure,
it's just so important to look after yourself, and one of those things is moving. So whether it's skating, which I think is the best,
mm-hmm.
As long as you're within your limits and you're not hurting yourself, it's just super important.
Yeah,
absolutely, I agree 100%. I've also been going through, a lot of difficult anxiety stuff lately, and it's been up and down, but I definitely have found that when I do go to the gym, when I do go walk around the track and do tire flips or something or anything like that, it is a huge help. And it's something that anybody that says like, oh, I'm not feeling this great, let's go for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's walk over to the gym, let's walk down into the mechanical space, and let's go move some shit or something. Like it definitely helps a lot, even just the tiniest little bit. But you know, I've always found that if I do a good workout or something like that, or I'm doing a lot of stuff at work, like moving things, whatever, I find the next 2-3 days my mind is way more clear, and it's much easier for me to deal with whatever's going on in my brain, and I can move past it much, much faster, or deal with it easier. So I agree 100%, Scott. I think that's really a really smart idea that you have, as far as, you know, movement being tied to good mental health.
Yeah, I just think it's an important thing, and for people to other people to hear, people that you see, like I'm not massively in social media or anything, but you know, I do get messages from people, and it's just mm-hmm. important to ask the simple question, "Are you okay?"
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've been making that a point to if I see somebody not normal or something like that, I'll ask, like, "Hey, how you doing?" Or if I saw that they were, you know, posted something questionable or something like that, or said something, I'll check in with them every couple of days or every day if I have to, if I feel it's necessary. So, because I mean, I know what it's like to feel that way, where you're just like, I don't think anybody knows what's going on with me, and I'm not going to say anything. Mm-hmm. So I'll make it a point to reach out to someone and say, "Hey, if you want to talk, here's my phone number. Reach out to me here. Whatever you got to do, you know, if you need someone to talk to, I'm here for you."
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why I answer, like, every single person that's messaged me, and I've got amazing response from this thing that we've done, Lawrence. It's been mm-hmm. Humbling, actually, like, that's a bit overwhelming, to tell you the truth. but I reply to everyone, every mm-hmm. single person that's messaged me, I've written them a decent reply to. Just because we're all people, and we're all, you know, if someone likes something, far out, like, you've got to be open and not shut yourself down, and we're all just trying to get through what we're trying to get through, and we've got a passion for a certain sport. So it's really, really important that, for all that kind of stuff, you know, the social media stuff. I see so many people on, you know, so many posts cutting things down because they don't like it. It's fine if you don't like it. Just, you don't have to comment on it.
Yeah.
Like, you're just trying to get a reaction, and that doesn't build anyone up. It doesn't help anyone. And you know what? It doesn't actually make you feel better either. Like, you write some snide comment, it's like all you're doing is bringing negativity. And that might be a little bit hippie into the world, but coming from me, but I kind of feel that way, you know, like you don't like something, it doesn't matter. I don't like everything. That's fine. You don't need to comment on it. Like, just let it go. I don't have to like that. And if you like it, let them know. You know, like, build them up, build people up, don't tear people down. I suppose that's the kind of person I am. And I hope that's the kind of, you know, the people that like my stuff, I hope they see that, and, you know, that they appreciate that just a person the same as everyone else, and we're all just doing this skating thing, so.
You're a good man, Scott.
Shh, don't tell anyone.